everybody. Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Mike Brown. We are on today with our friend Sanj Sanampudi. He's the CEO of Concert Finance. We're going to talk about resetting quotas, compensation. We have obviously COVID-19 upon us, so we thought it timely to do this podcast. Sanj, thanks so much for coming on to the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Can you, maybe just to start, can you talk a little bit about your background, sort of your origin story, even in advance of us getting into Concert? Would be helpful for the audience to know.
Yeah, before Concert, I had about 15 years of experience in financial planning and analysis and accounting roles, later became a CFO, and as I was moving on from that role and thinking about sort of the things that always annoyed me about being a CFO, compensation always stuck out. It didn't seem like we were handling that process very efficiently. And that led me to co-found Concert.
Cool. And what's the, maybe just a bunch of founders that will listen to this podcast will be familiar with you, but there's probably a component of our audience that isn't familiar with Concert. Maybe just give us the sort of high level on the company for folks.
Yeah, we call ourselves the Smarter Commission Software because we go past just the math to get the payroll calculation right and really think about motivation and driving your team's performance. One interesting thing that happened as we started the company is we got all of this data, and we were seeing companies that looked pretty similar by a lot of metrics performing really differently. So we took their comp plans and worked with neuroscientists and behavioral psychologists to understand, is there something that kind of is more fundamentally driving performance than just the company and the company stats itself? And the neuroscientist looked at the two plans and he was like, yeah, no shit, this one's going to do better. And that kind of sent us on this journey of, well, actually, your compensation plan should be driving performance. How do we help companies accomplish that?
Cool. And your New York-based business?
Yep, we're New York-based and venture-backed. Yeah, all
cool.
In New York.
I always ask this question before we jump into the topic. What is one thing that no one on this podcast is going to know about you?
Well, I think my mom will probably listen to this, and she doesn't
okay.
know this about me. So I'm shockingly good at karaoke. I don't know why
I'm
so good at it, but I once was on like one of those karaoke bar stages and sang Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone. And the crowd demanded an encore. I got free drinks for the rest of the night.
So, there you go.
You know,
we have not in 150 podcasts, we've not had anyone that's an expert karaoke person. So that's great.
That's like another startup idea than
neuroscience
karaoke.
There you go. Maybe just kind of set the stage for us, right? So we sort of talked about the topic at the outset, resetting quotas, thinking about compensation amidst the coronavirus. Just, you know, you're sort of on the ground, you're still in the same sort of business and position that you were before, but we've got a totally different playbook right now. I mean, what's sort of the new normal? How did we get here? What, you know, maybe just sort of frame the topic for the listeners before we dig in on some specifics.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the current macro situation has changed almost everyone's behavior. It's changed how buyers buy, how sellers sell. And it all stems from this idea of uncertainty. And uncertainty, when you look at how psychologists sort of break apart the sources of uncertainty, has three components to it. The first is complexity. So how many intermoving parts and dependencies are you thinking about to make a decision? The second is ambiguity, which is the range of outcomes for each of those parts. And then the final is probability. So when you kind of mash all of that together, do you have a good idea of like what the world will look like on the other side? Your brain naturally is running all of these mental models and simulations. And when there's a lot of each of those factors, what ends up happening is you're building anxiety. And that anxiety sort of stops you in your tracks and stops you from performing the way that you were used to perform. And you see this in a few ways. So like on the buyer side, like putting on my old CFO hat, you'll see budget freezes. You know, when you're saying you're sort of paralyzed from making a decision, a budget freeze is the exact manifestation of that. On the seller side, it sort of means that the old plays you were using to engage your prospects and customers don't really work the same way anymore. The messaging isn't quite as relevant, and they're prioritizing different activities. Depending on what stats you look at, I think Bridge Group put out a great analysis of what happened to inbound lead volume, and it seems like it's dropped by 25 to 35%. And 25% they attribute to really buying patterns changing already. You know, we're kind of a month into the thick of it, and it's already changed quite dramatically.
Got it. And maybe just also to stay at a high level, but you know, you can get into some specifics if you want, right? How is Concert and you thinking about high level advice, some of the perspectives you're giving to clients, and then obviously we'll go into greater detail on some of the specifics a bit later, but just at a high level, kind of what are you advising and how are you coaching?
Yeah, so we kind of give our clients advice in two ways. One is really, you know, knowing that buyers are buying in a different way, it does mean that your sales playbook has to change. So the tactics you used before probably aren't the tactics that will work right now. Even if you're in one of these industries that is performing well despite these conditions, you're probably operating a slightly different play. On the seller side, you know, the way to sort of break your team out of this anxiety and this funk is that they've got to see that they're making meaningful progress to goals. And that ties back to resetting quotas. So we basically say, regardless of who the client is, it probably makes sense to think about your quotas. Even if you're in one of those businesses that's doing well right now, your team individually still has a lot of anxiety about their job, about how the economy will hold up, about what, you know, if we go into a recession, what that looks like.
Got it. You guys have a really nice flywheel that I think is important and relevant to this, that maybe if you could just sort of give the descriptor for the audience around quota, playbook, and commission and how you think about it in this context. And I think it kind of weaves nicely into the prior advice that you talked about.
Yeah. So as we worked with neuroscientists and behavioral psychologists, what we've discovered is that commissions processes actually are just a feedback loop. So we've created our Commission Smarter framework that sort of ties compensation programs back to real feedback. And there are three components to any feedback loop, which is where am I going, how do I get there, and based on where I am, what do I do next? And when you look at commissions processes, a quota is really sort of setting the mark of where you're going. The playbook is giving you the direction of how do you get there. And the commission is sort of letting you know, am I on the right track or am I on the wrong track? And when we see that those elements fit together in that way, I think it leads you to a really different approach to comp.
Got it. And that, I mean, in this market environment, are you seeing all three of those things necessary to change, or is it more like you're talking a bit about revision of quotas, a little bit about sales playbook, and then obviously as a result, the commission will go down. But is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah, so all three of those things will probably change right now, and they have to change in harmony. I think probably the most challenging piece that we see is people will say, oh, I need to change quotas. And, well, maybe changing quotas is correct, but maybe you also need to guarantee a portion of the comp because you can't make, you know, you can't make a comfortable earning just on whatever activity metrics you might be using. Or, you know, you might change quota and comp, but you're fundamentally not changing the playbook. You're not giving people the tools that they need to be successful in this environment.
Got it. Okay, super helpful. Maybe just to go a level deeper and maybe like sort of setting the framework. If you're a chief executive, you know, CEO of a small company, maybe you're a VP of sales that's sort of in a medium-sized business, or maybe you're a chief revenue officer and you've got a lot of team members. I want to just dig in on a couple of specific tactical points. So when you talk about the quota piece, how are you seeing people actually execute on this? Is it sort of a face-to-face meeting? How are they sort of coaching AEs, SDRs, et cetera, through that? What are you kind of advising, and what are you seeing more specifically around that?
Yeah, so very specifically on quotas, we advise our customers and prospects on the idea that quotas are directly tied to motivation. So we often reference marathon finish times when we talk to people about, like, help them understand why quotas matter so much. And the most common marathon finish time is 3 hours and 59 minutes. It's not 4 hours. It's not 4:01. And it's 3 hours and 59 minutes because usually you have someone running with a four-hour sign who's setting pace. And when you see that you're pretty close to that person, you start to dig a little bit deeper. You do an assessment of, like, your whole body, and you're figuring out, where can I find the strength to push myself a little bit farther, a little bit faster? And people are naturally wired to perform to a target. Our first set of work with anyone we engage with is we try to break this notion of sales reps being coin-operated, and instead try to instill this idea that sales reps are really quota-driven. Once we kind of break through that idea of, okay, let's set the right targets, which will push people a little bit harder, but also make it so that it's very likely that they will be successful. In this environment, we're recommending that companies look at their performance week over week and potentially even set weekly goals, because I think, you know, even if you're just following the news, our expectations of what the world would look like and when we get back to, quote, normal, changes on a daily basis. So, you know, even calling what the next month looks like is almost impossible.
Got it. And has that advice, you know, weekly sounds right and makes a ton of sense. Has that advice been sort of picked up by most of your clients? I mean, is that, while it might be a recommendation, it's obviously hard for a sales executive to move to that, but I'm curious just what you're seeing on the front lines. Is it actually being implemented?
I think there are a few challenges that people have in implementing it on a regular basis. And it's mainly, one, is there someone in the company who's charged with the analytics? So is someone actually making sure that the right data fields are being filled in and they're filled in completely and accurately? and that there's some amount of analysis behind it. And the second piece is, are those numbers really visible? So if you're moving to this weekly monitoring, it can't just be, you know, you, Mike, as the CEO monitoring these metrics and then saying like, okay, this is what happened last week. Like, let's try again for a slightly higher number next week. It actually needs to be the whole team owning the aggregate performance and the whole team seeing progress towards it and thinking about, well, what can I do differently? And when you move to those types of cycles, you'll see that people are more willing to share the ideas that you'll then incorporate into your sales playbook. So it is a really big investment, but I think it's the one that kind of pays off the most in an environment like this.
Got it. And maybe just one thing that maybe even more narrow to that, you present this plan to your AEs and SDRs. How have you sort of coached the response, and what are the, like, I'm assuming the SDR activity metrics are going to go down. You need to be sort of more realistic about that in this environment. The AE sort of, obviously, close rates are going to go down, you know, sales cycles are going to go up. How are you seeing the conversation between those frontline individual contributors and the managers, and you know, how do you think about sort of setting the appropriate metrics for that? Because logically, that probably will come up.
Yeah. So the first thing goes back to measuring. So making sure that these metrics are measured consistently and that they're very available to your team. So they can kind of see, like, how are we doing in aggregate? And if you are individually performing higher than the team average, you're actually more likely to try to work harder to pull the rest of the team up. If you are individually performing lower than the average, you're going to work harder to try to meet the average. So having those metrics, like, very clear and visible is super important. But when you see that sales cycles are lengthening, when you see that conversion rates are going down, it's a good indication that the tactics that you have in place aren't really working for the market that you're going after. And that's really important. So you can then dig into, well, where is it actually working? What are these bright spots that I can find somewhere in my data? So maybe it's just prospects are engaging with blog posts differently. Okay, if they're engaging with a blog post differently, well, how can I change my outbound sequences to talk about that message a little bit more or deliver that content without someone having to click through?
Got it. And then maybe just two big buckets that tend to come up, you know, top performers. Do you think mostly they'll stick around in this market just given the uncertainty? How do you avoid your top performers sort of leaving or moving on? And then, you know, you probably got a couple of people that have missed quota. You put them on performance improvement plans, or you're just sort of a executive and you kind of know who's going to make it and who's not. How are you advising teams to think about those two buckets in this environment?
When we talk about top performers, we try to remind everyone that top performers are like winning. You know, top performers like doing really well. So in this market, the best way to keep top performers is to keep make sure that they're still doing well, that they know, yeah, your quota is probably lower, but it still give them a quota that makes them feel proud about the work that they're doing. On the flip side, for bottom performers, it's actually a really interesting time to be sort of like a lower performer. Low performance has a few components to it. Like, very rarely is it just like, this is a horrible human who shouldn't be employed by anyone. Lower performers are just operating in a situation or a context that doesn't amplify their strengths. But guess what? Everyone's situation and context totally just changed. So if you're running different plays, you might find some of those perform, especially if you're running plays that aren't focused on closing or conversion, but plays that are more focused on nurturing and education, you might find that some of the people who were considered low performers actually do those activities really well. So I think it gives you a chance to like really assess like what are the skills that each person does really well, and are those skills useful to the organization right now? And also, are those skills the types of skills that we're going to need in the future? Because I think it's probably fair to say that whatever worked before this is probably not going to be, you know, your new business as usual after.
Sure. You also talked, we talked a little bit offline about the importance of customer success here, and obviously there's a, you know, blending of marketing and sales and CS in any SaaS company, and, you know, the best will have an SLA and it will be pretty clean in terms of the handoffs, but, you know, we're kind of turning everything upside down in this market. How are you seeing those teams, particularly maybe the CS side, sort of, you know, function and focus, and as it relates to your work there, kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah. So that's a really great question. And I think every company that we talk to is, it's like the number one concern right now. Like, yeah, sales productivity is a concern, but, you know, you're in a much bigger problem if all of your customers are leaving. And what we've advised companies on, at least when it comes to CS plans, is fundamentally change the success metric. So CS teams typically are paid on like a retention rate, whether it's gross or net is sort of dependent on the company. But it's, you know, your client paid us $100 last year, they're paying us, you know, $95 this year, you have 95% retention rate. Retention rate is really an efficiency metric, and it doesn't really tell you what you need to do to retain that customer. It's just saying, like, how efficient were you at retaining customers? So what we've encouraged companies to do is shift to a much more direct payment, where you're actually paying a much smaller but still a percent of the direct deal value. And what that implicitly says to a CS rep is efficiency doesn't matter anymore. We know that we're in this weird time where we're going to have to do some things that aren't as efficient as they should be, but that's okay. What is important is that we retain our customers and make sure they continue to see value.
Got it. That's super helpful. Just to go back to this dynamic, you know, you have retention-based outcomes, you have activity-based, you know, you have kind of retention pieces with the CS team that have been historical. You have in sales usually sort of activity or outcome-based approaches. You know, you talked about this in CS and the need to shift, and you've talked about sort of moving to a weekly cadence, finding things that are working. I mean, how do you think about that dynamic activity versus outcome in this market, right? You obviously want to keep people motivated, so perhaps the activity piece is now more important than the outcome piece because you kind of know that deals aren't going to close. But I'm just curious how you're coaching and how you're thinking about balancing that with your customers.
So there is this idea of like, oh, we're shifting from outcomes to activities. And as a company, we've always said that activities are really important, that activity-based metrics should always be part of your comp plan. And the reason is like kind of back to just how your brain works. As an AE, if you have a 25% win rate, which I would say is pretty good, that means that 75% of the time you're getting negative feedback where someone is saying no to you. It changes your behavior. It changes your motivation level. It changes your perception of what works and what doesn't work. Paying on activity sort of says, hey, you are supposed to say here no, you know, 7.5 out of 10 times. It's okay. What's really important is you do this thing and have this conversation or point to this value. So, you know, we've always seen that activities have a really important place in a comp plan. I think what is different now is you just don't see as many outcomes. So if sales cycles are lengthening, if there's pricing pressure now, and there might be pricing, even more pricing pressure down the line, that's all going to change a salesperson's ability to achieve the types of outcomes that you're all used to. So shifting to more of an activity or more of the compensation to activities totally makes sense. I think depending on your team, you might find that you're shifting them earlier in the pipeline. So we've seen a bunch of AEs sort of move backwards in the pipe and work on more like nurturing engagement work. We've also seen where, you know, traditionally inbound SDRs aren't getting the inbound volume that they were used to, so they're moving to outbound. Or they might even move to CS to support some extra work that's needed to really delight customers to get those renewals signed. So all of those types of things, whether it's a brand new activity that you're coaching someone on or something that's a little bit earlier in the pipeline than they might be used to, is up for grabs in terms of what you would pay on.
Got it. I want to sort of bring it back to the 30,000 foot view here. You've obviously been in the front lines for the last, you know, 30 to 60 days, you know, in the selling theater, coaching these companies. We've been getting this question a lot. I mean, how long do you really think this is going to last in terms of SaaS, you know, sales and what are some predictions for the future? And then, you know, we constantly talk about sort of the drift and how we've sort of gone away from basics in the over the past couple of years, or tried a lot of new things. I'm curious, kind of, do you think this is going to be a shift back to the basics just as a result of the necessity to qualify better and the IT buyer to be more specific about prioritization and need?
Yeah, I think the quick answer to it is like, yes, this is probably going to change the way SaaS is sold forever. And I think the metric I would point to is that I think CSO Insights does a study every year of what percent of your team hits quota. And you see a bunch of, or you see the metrics are always somewhere between, you know, 50 and 60% of a team is missing quota. That implies that either teams are really inefficient or that targets are really unrealistic. And if you think about the efficiency side of it, that has huge implications for your business. And I think a lot of what we're seeing in terms of layoffs that are going around is because if you only have 50% of your team hitting quota, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. Like, your sales cycle can't get that much longer, your lead volume can't drop by much, and your pricing can't drop by much. And when you have the confluence of all of those things, well, then you realize you built sort of the wrong sales structure. I think, and these are all my personal views, I should qualify that. But
yeah,
I also think that the follow-on of that is part of that kind of inefficiency in this is these hyper-segmented sales roles, So, you know, you have a team that's only doing inbound, and you have a team that's only doing outbound, and you have a team that's only doing renewals, and a team that's only doing upsells. While that is, makes a lot of sense in terms of having the right conversations with people in good times, in sort of tougher times, it does seem like you need more utility players. So I do wonder if that kind of utility salesperson where relationships are emphasized a lot more, like you were saying, is what we're going to move to. I mean, if you look at what happened on the marketing side with everything that has shifted in the account-based marketing world, account-based marketing is sort of just like what marketing was 30 years ago. So it feels like it's going to move to much more kind of follow a customer along their full life cycle and just have sort of support resources that helps that one relationship manager efficiently deliver value to everyone.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Maybe just to close, you know, we're at about 30 minutes. Any sort of final, you know, either just sort of recapping the conversation or final tricks, tips, things that people should be considering that they might not be in this market environment around a reset of quotas and comp?
Yeah, I think the one thing for everyone that I try to get everyone to take away anytime I talk to them is the most common marathon finish time is 3 hours and 59 minutes. The targets you set are tremendously impactful to the performance that you're going to see on the other side. So be really thoughtful about the quotas that you're setting out. Make sure that they are achievable. And if they are achievable, you're going to see a massive difference in performance and engagement.
Well said. Thank you so much, Sanj, for coming on. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. I travel the world and the seven seas. Oh, oh.